Steve, so great to be hanging out together with you today and to have the chance just to chat in the company of anybody that might be tuning in to the conversation. We have had a bunch of chances to visit together over these months, and I've just loved the chance to know your story. I think it was back in the early part of our transition that I interviewed you in a gathering a little bit like this, and I know how many people just commented on what fun it was for them to hear your heart and to begin to get to know how it beats. And today, I guess we're just sort of reversing the polarity a little bit, and you're going to have a chance to ask a few questions of me, and you all out there just get to listen to me blather as if you don't have enough of that going already. Thanks so much for even caring to inquire further about any of the things we'll talk about today.
Well, I mean, 60 days, I've been just wanting to put you on the hot seat and ask these questions. I think these questions are really helpful for our entire congregation.
Yeah.
Just to be able to hear, be able to hear from your heart, hear just about what these last 28 years have meant to you. And so, but I kind of want to just start out. One of the things I've realized about Christ Church is it's uniquely healthy. Just in my 60 days here with the staff, with volunteers, congregation, even just the organization of it.
Yeah.
And I've traveled a lot over the years. I've seen the travails of the American church
Yeah.
in various places around our country.
Yeah.
Help me understand why, in almost 60 years, this place has been able to uniquely stay healthy.
Yeah, boy, I feel like on some level that's always the grace of God.
Yeah.
You know, when we stay physically healthy, or spiritually healthy, there's always God's grace at work somehow in the mix of that. I think that there are probably a number of factors that kick into this. One factor certainly is that I think from very early on, the folks that gathered the church together had a vision for it to be a healthy church. And we were chatting earlier about you're looking at some of the founding documents of
Yes.
Christ Church, and the people that framed this community really had a passion to see us be a different sort of church than some that were out there at the time. At that particular moment, there was so much conflict going on in churches. There was a lot of fighting over social issues of the day. And the founders of Christ Church wanted this to be a different sort of place. And so as the church got going, this became a little bit of the identity. You know how families are this way?
Yes.
So we think of ourselves, you know, we're the Bears fans.
Yeah.
No matter how badly the Bears do, we're going to be for the Bears.
Yes.
And it becomes a deep value
Yes.
in the life of the place that imprints the family. And even as new people come in, they sort of get on board with that idea. When I came here 28 years ago, this was already part of the DNA of the place, is they wanted to be a healthy church. They wanted it to be a successful transition. I think a second factor has been there's always been great care in the selection of the leaders of the church. There's always been a determination to try and find people who would go on the board of trustees or the board of elders who had already demonstrated health,
Yeah.
that these were people that were plugged into small group life, who had jumped in and led things effectively and in a way that compelled and excited people and felt healthy. And so we just had at the helm of the church along the way really remarkable people. I remember when I first got here and I sat with the board of trustees and the elders and their families, I thought to myself, wow, this is amazing. I mean, how is it that this kind of a collection of people has come together? A third factor has been, and we've worked hard at the kind of spiritual disciplines within our staff that have helped us to stay reasonably healthy as people. I think, I mean, as anybody would imagine, we're very much human beings. We do not have it all figured out. There are cracks and fraying that goes on in our family lives, just like everybody else. But we have been able to put together a staff that has an unusually high number of high IQ, high EQ people. Yep. People who are hungry, humble, and smart, as the Lencioni crowd puts it. And that, too, I think has helped give us a certain character to us. Maybe the last thing I will say is when there is a long-term senior pastorate or lead pastorate, the pastor has a chance, and you've heard me say this before, to make mistakes, have them catch up with with them, and then learn from that and get healthier themselves. So that was probably true for Arthur de Kreider, and it has certainly been true for me. And I don't know that you can have a healthy church if the lead pastor isn't reasonably healthy, isn't working on health on a regular basis themselves. So
you talked about that in the Note to the Door about failing forward.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, I was such a powerful reminder that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, but how do you fail forward and keep growing in that?
Yeah.
One of the things I've been amazed too, even just about the staff culture that you've been able to cultivate is, you know, we have these staff meetings and they're amazing. Worship, connection, we're eating together, we're talking. But every Thursday, when it's not a staff meeting, we have these like staff hangouts and we open up the Mission Cafe and you'll usually set it up sometimes with a devotional or a question. And then I feel like in my 60 days here, almost every staff person has just gone up and grabbed the mic and shared a Only God story or shared what's happening in their ministry, prayed for someone. And it's like the ownership, the this is my church too.
Yeah.
And just celebrating each other. I've never seen that before. Just the ability to have so much fun and do great work. And it's just, you've cultivated and the team has cultivated something that I think is just remarkable.
Thank you, Steve. I you know, I'm always I'm a relentless maximizer, so I'm more conscious of the things that maybe I wish were even stronger. Like I wish there was an even greater culture of play within the staff. Like it's one of my great regrets that I did not sponsor a Nerf war at some point while I was here with the staff.
Trustees, you heard that? I got to make that happen, I guess.
He does. But you're a playful guy, and I think that's one of the things I'm so excited about having you here, is I think you will bring some of those wonderful elements into the staff culture. But you've named something that I think is really good, and it's the mark, I think, of healthy families or work groups in other environments, or and certainly of teams, is that everybody owns the culture.
Yep.
You know, it's not just one leader rah-rahing this. It's like everybody is responsible for it. And when things are sort of out of line and the values aren't being lived out, it's not the captain or the leader that has to always call it out. People on the team call it out because they notice the difference. There's been a disturbance in the force.
That's right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because I think if we drill down that concept a little bit more, again, I've had a front row seat at watching what happens when too much power is put in the hands of one leader, even a very gifted one.
Yeah.
I'm curious, how have you thought about that?
Yeah.
And how do we avoid that from ever happening in the coming seasons, decades here at Christ Church?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think we both watched all these major churches going through trauma, and you've been up close and personal with that. And then we know what happens, right, to all the people who have had idealized the leadership, who've counted on the stability of the church when it suddenly falters and fragments. And I think that along the way, and I wish I had Arthur de Kreider sitting with us to be in this conversation, because Art would certainly have been somebody who understood the importance of accountability. He often talked so reverently about the other leaders at the table. And I feel that same kind of sense of awe when I look around the table of the Board of Trustees and many of the other leadership settings. Our Constitution, as you probably know, or you do know for sure, does vest an immense amount of authority in the senior or lead pastor of the church. Not only is the pastor standing on a very big platform, which begins to give them all kinds of sway just by virtue of the frequency and the extent of their voice, but in an unusual way, the pastor is the chairperson of the board of trustees and of the board of elders, and that is that was done intentionally, I should say, at the start. When the Constitution was framed here, because the original pioneers of Christ Church wanted there to be able to be strong, nimble leadership. Mm. They had seen these churches that were so tremendously committee-bound, with kind of part-time people coming in and slowing processes up. They wanted Christ Church to operate a little bit more like an entrepreneurial organization, and that would require quick decision-making and the authority given to the lead, to the leader. That's all been very, very good. But that it's also depended then on the leader being highly respectful of the limits of that authority, of being more consultative and collaboration oriented. And I know that has been important through the years, and I've always tried to do that. So even though I've been the chairman of the Board of Trustees, I've always kind of looked at the vice chair as my boss.
Yeah.
And we've been more like co-chairs in a sense along the way, and so that's been helpful. I've also felt like I should always have around me people who could ask me tough questions, and so I've built intentionally accountability groups of various kinds, both inside the church and outside the church, because I know I'm flesh, I'm a human being, and I'm as subject to making mistakes, losing my way, having blind spots. After the most recent problems that happened up in another major church in Chicagoland, I did say at an annual meeting several years ago, maybe we need to rethink the way that this document works. I started thinking to myself, and this was long before you came on the screen, and what I'm about to say is not because of you by any stretch of the imagination. I feel like the church has been blessed yet again with somebody who is very oriented towards sharing leadership. But I did say at an annual meeting that I thought that we should look at our Constitution and really, and maybe even consider the possibility of adding or changing it in a way that allowed the lead pastor to be, in effect, the chief executive officer, but accountable to a board led by a lay person who was the chair. Who was the chief governance officer of the church. So we began talking about this, actually, as we discussed succession. We talked about it within the Board of Trustees, and the trustees took that opportunity to look at the whole Constitution and ask, how else might we modify this great founding document so that as we move into the seasons to come, it best serves our church? How can it establish some appropriate accountability around the lead pastor office? How can we make the document a little bit leaner than it is? The modern constitutions now are pretty lean. They put much more of the verbiage and the policy in the bylaws. And so the board has been working on this on the side over the last year and come up, I think, with some really great suggestions. As you know, and I will just say to those who are listening in, our Board of Elders now has been starting to work with this material as well. And we have some of our past Elder Council chairs that have been getting there with their sharp pens and offering great feedback on that. And so a little later this year, as we're approaching our annual meeting, the congregation will be brought further into this. And we hope at the March annual meeting, which you get to chair, to put some, I think, really good changes in front of the congregation that will, I think, make us even more effective and safe as an organization in the years to come.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think in watching the trustees, elder council, watching all the different hands again, it's just another testimony to how much people care about the health and the well-being of this church for decades to come. You know, it's just beautiful.
I like that. I will say one more thing about that, and just that I do think it's appropriate that the lead pastor chair the board of elders, because I think the board of elders is, in a sense, an extension of the shepherding function of the church, and the lead pastor is the kind of chief shepherd. So I don't think that should change. Although that was one of the things we asked at the time. There are churches that board of elders is chaired by a layperson. I do like that aspect of our polity, and hope that you will too as you go on.
Yeah. As you look at Christ's church today, what encourages you?
Where do I start on that one? You, for one thing. I'm trying to embarrass you, but. I was very, very hopeful that God would do a miraculous act of grace and bring us somebody who can keep this thing going, that brings the heart, the right heart. And Steve, I do see in you, and I want to say to those listening, and I did not arrange this with him in advance, but I just see in you the shepherd's heart that I wanted for Christ Church. That obviously I didn't have a vote in this. The board made this decision, and the congregation ultimately was one that voted this. But you have a shepherd's heart. You've got such a keen mind. You are so remarkable in your preaching and study and command of the scriptures. And I just feel like you're the right guy to carry this through into the next season. So that excites me. I'm excited by the quality of the staff team we've got.
Yeah.
And I know that you've walked into that and been pleased with the intelligence and capability of our team. We have lay leaders in almost every critical position that are doing super things. I'm excited by what I see as the increasingly vibrant variety, to borrow from my friend David Goatley, that is in the congregation's life. All the different ages, more and more of a multi-ethnic kind of flavor to the church's life. And that bodes so well for the future, because as the nation becomes a little bit more vibrant in that sense, it just makes us able to connect to the people around us, the communities around us, in a very relevant kind of way. And it brings lots of intelligence and viewpoints to the circle. I think we've got a great platform now. I mean, I think we've always had unusually fine facilities and technology, and that's been something that's been a high value for the church through time. But this recent refresh of all that through the LIFT initiative, I think, has positioned the church to reach kids and families and nurture and support older people in a very, very good way. So, you know, that excites me about the future of Christ Church.
Well, I mean, I think that's a testimony. I mean, as I call and talk to my friends and I try to describe what I just experienced in 60 days, just getting the chance to follow you around. But when I tell them about the LIFT initiative, I tell them about how this space was refreshed, this student spaces, the kids spaces, the LIFT Center, at the Butterfield campus, and you led an initiative that you were never going to actually see the full fruit of, but to set up this place for decades to come, which just for me speaks so much of your love for this church and your belief in the next chapter. And I all my friends are like, I wish my predecessor would have done that. I wish my predecessor, you know, and so, but it's so, so true. I love hearing what encourages you. I think everyone who's watching this, who just loves you dearly, is also wondering, what are you going to miss about Christ Church?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so much. People are great, as you know, idealizing the next season of my life. And it's going to be great. And maybe we'll talk more about that later. But I'm going to miss just so much about this amazing experience that we've had here. Obviously, I'm going to miss the people most. You know, you build so many great relationships when you stay in a particular community for almost 30 years. The friendships, just the shared experiences. I mean, we went through 9/11 together. We went through the Great Recession together. We endured all of the difficult struggles that we've had around race and justice and the elections of our time. Then we endured COVID together. I mean, there's just a bond that gets built with a community of people when you suffer and struggle and strive through all of those kinds of things. And when you also see God doing these amazing things that have happened in the life of the church over the years. So I'm just going to miss these amazing friends. And that's going to be very, very hard. I've had the privilege of of baptizing children who I grew up to marry, and then I baptized their children. And that's irreplaceable. I'll never have that again. So I will miss that. I think I will miss the remarkable resourcefulness of this community. Amy and I are going to be seasonal residents of an extremely resourceful community as well. But from the church standpoint, you've been part of resourceful churches. This one, pound for pound, is remarkably resourceful. And so if I have something that pops into my mind, chances are our team can do it.
Yes.
And I will miss having that. I'm going to go from this remarkable staff and group of lay leaders to a much leaner organization.
Yep.
And so I'm going to have to learn to kind of go more back to basics. But I will miss that a great deal. I was reminded today when we had our staff break, Mark Stosher walked in from Albania.
Yes.
And I have known Mark for many, many years. I'm going to miss our mission partners.
Yeah.
These are remarkable people, and I learn from them. I've been shaped so powerfully by the faith and daring and practical commitment and strategic thinking and love of Jesus that I see in our mission partners. I wrote my book, Witness Essentials, basically mining what it is that these different mission partners think about as they're trying to connect with their communities and lift the name of Jesus and the reputation of Jesus and help people know him. So I'm going to really miss that amazing circle of folks. And I will say finally, I'm going to miss the chance to talk weekly with so many people in the middle of life. The community Amy and I live in certainly has a range of people, and many still working actively. But Christchurch is filled with people who are raising families, who are operating significant enterprises in the community, that are just shaping American culture, or at least our portion of it, in a very important way. And we came here because of that. Mm. We left San Diego, we left a resort kind of community to go to be in the middle of life like this. And we're going back to a leadership community, but a bit of a resort community it's a little bit like Rancho Santa Fe East.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss the city of broad shoulders. I'm going to miss the robustness of engagement with the issues of life that exist here.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful that you mentioned Witness Essentials. I just finished it, and it's such a great, great book. And I can see how you've mined, like you talked about, from the mission partners, but just that side of your heart, and your writing ability. It's just really, really impactful read. And so,
thanks.
Yeah, so good.
Appreciate it.
Speaking of kind of your writing, you've given us some thoughtful counsel in your Notes at the Door series. Is there anything you'd want me to be particularly careful about as I take up this new mantle?
I think, Steve, when I came here, I believed I was entering into this place with a listening ear. Mm. I I believe that I didn't need to immediately put my stamp on everything. I believe that I had learned how to die to self, and that I was going to be, I was going to really just be able to pick up where Art and Gladys had left off and just and lead from there. If I'm ruthlessly honest with myself, I was not done dying to my ego. I was not. Now I was younger, a little bit younger, and I took down some fences before knowing why they'd been put up. In making some of the changes that I made, I didn't ask quite enough questions about the ripple effect of those changes in people's lives. And if I could have a do-over in some of those places, I would have done some of those things differently. Now, my experience of you, to be truthful, and I'm being truthful here throughout, but I have been very, very encouraged by the maturity that I meet in you, the humility, the question asking. I think you're further along the spiritual journey than I was when I came here. And I say that because I actually know more than the congregation knows yet about your capabilities. I know you always take a very humble, deferential position in relationship to other leaders here, and especially me. And I'm thinking often, oh, he doesn't need to be doing that. He actually knows the answers to these questions. You've had such remarkable experiences and exposures and networks and those kinds of things. But I guess the first thing I would want to say is I just want to commend the humility the angle of approach that you have to this whole community. I think that will play well. As you probably are aware, a lot of people walk into new situations trying to lead adaptive change, and you need to. And that's a big part of what a leader has to do is keep pressing for the changes that are needed. I've talked about that in my notes at the door. But to lead adaptive change, you have to have demonstrated technical competence in the things that people really value.
Yep.
Preaching, pastoral care, the organization of the ministry, the financial stewardship, all the different pieces of the technical aspects of the job, and you have to have shown relational congruence. You have to have built relational cred.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you do those two, take the time to do those two things, you have the amazing ability to lead adaptive change. That's why if you stay a long time, people have seen all that technical competence. They've got all that relational capital. You can lead incredible change, yep, in ways that help the church go forward or organization go forward. So I would just say, be patient. You're going to be, hopefully, around a long, long, long time. Just keep doing what you're doing, which is building those relationships. You're already doing the job parts of these things so well. People are... I just can't get over how wonderfully you unpack the scriptures and connect it to life, and how good you are at the basics of pastoring. So I just would say, keep doing that. I would say a second tip would be stay close to Sarah and to Emerson and Mercy. Our kids were younger when we arrived, but again, if I had the chance to redo some things, I would have said I would have paid more attention to how much time I was spending.
Yeah.
And they are, as you've been through this, the price that families sometimes pay.
Yeah.
Because suddenly the pastor is pastoring everybody else's family.
Yeah.
And so I would say be a good steward of your family. Don't have a heart attack, which I did at age 52, because I was struggling so hard to cover all the bases.
Mm.
And I would say that you and I are very, very similar in, as we've talked about, in lots of ways. And for those of you listening in, it's scary how similar we are on all the different temperament and leadership profiles. That will create some confidence for the congregation that, that there's not a radical departure right. coming. But I will also say that one of the tendencies, because we're both kind of achievers and maximizers, is that we can get swallowed in the job.
Yeah.
And we want you healthy for a long time, your family healthy yeah. for a long time into the future. I would also say, you be you. Mm. You're different from me in wonderful ways. And I would say, lean into that. Okay. Change the structures you need to be able to maximize your gifts, mm. to go with what you're really good at doing. And harness the talents of the team that you've got, or bring in new people that you need to be able to fulfill the special calling God's given you in this next season. I was the right guy for the job at the time. I got enough. I was enough like Art DeKreider. I got this place in good ways, but I also was able to lead some very significant innovations.
Yeah.
And you will too. You'll do that. And I would just say, keep at that, and it's going to bear some tremendous fruit. It's a marathon, not a sprint, and I would just say, I hope you'll call me if I can ever be helpful to you along the way.
You're going to be like, oh, Amy, it's Steve again. you will be someone I call regularly, and I'm grateful for this friendship, and
yeah.
thanks for what you shared.
Yeah.
I think everyone is also wondering what's exciting to you as you and Amy look ahead to this next season. Is there anything especially exciting?
Oh yeah, gosh, so for years I've always noticed that when people talk about becoming a grandparent, there's a special sparkle in their eyes, and it's that sparkle that tells you, oh, you know something that I don't yet know. I intellectually know it, but you know it in your heart. And Amy and I both are very, very excited about our first grandchild coming sometime towards the end of March, early April. That's exciting to us. And to think that we're gonna be able to come back here in the summertime and have the leisure to really spend time with our grandchild, our grandson, and with other parts of our family, that's a great source of joy.
And I already have booked an August preaching that the Reverend Dan Meyer is going to be coming back. So in so many ways, it's beautiful. It's when you're not like going, never coming back. Like
yes.
you're going to be coming back, and yeah. It's going to be great to see
I
you around
hope
here.
I hope I'm going to occasionally make the cut to be one of those.
Oh, you will in 2025 for sure.
I will look forward to that. We're excited about feeling tropical breezes in February. We're going to miss the robust sound of the snowblower, but we're excited about that. We're thrilled about still being involved in ministry, but sort of the basics of ministry, and hopefully having more margin for rest and refreshment and recreation and reflection. Sometimes it just moves so fast. You don't have time to think, to savor it, to read for pleasure versus for the next thing that you're accountable for. And so we're looking forward to those things. And we know that God has put great people in the community that we'll be serving. Yep. And we're looking forward to some of those new relationships and friendships, and then the joy of being able to come to Chicagoland in the summer.
That's awesome.
It feels like a gift to have this balanced portfolio of things in our future.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited that you're going to be continuing teaching, to golf, and
I need a lot of work on that.
and just the journey you and Amy as grandparents is going to be amazing. Selfishly, I hope you will write because you are such an incredible writer, and I think there's so much wisdom you have to offer the kingdom. And I'm just reading some of your documents that you have put and created and saved. And I'm like, this needs to be in a book. This needs to be in a book. And so, so if you don't publish it, I'll publish it. No,
it belongs to God.
Yes, so no, but seriously, thank you so much for all that you have given, all you have done, and you mean so much to all of us. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a delight. I will be watching with delight and prayer to the next season, the great adventure of this remarkable community unfolding, and I've got great confidence in the pastor that will be leading us. So thanks, brother. I'll be one of your, you're my pastor now. So I'm really thrilled about that.
Thank you. Thank you.